Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
There's just so many things that I just couldn't get out of my head.
I wasn't sure how much of this is actually happening and how much of this is like a hallucination.
The sound and the score is amazing.
You just felt everything as a parent there is just literally flooding out through every single pore of her body. I've not felt like so struck by a grief scene in many a film.
You can see her in the corner. I remember seeing that because I completely fell for it and it scared the shit out of me.
Staring intently at him as she's sawing her own head off. I was just like, oh, that's not nice.
No, that is not nice. You are correct.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. I'm Kobe and I'm joined by Helen.
Hello.
Dan.
Hello.
I'm Brian and we're going to be talking about Hereditary.
Thank you as always to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Brian and Dan. If you'd please like to say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. My name is Brian Collins. I'm a digital marketer and I work for an NGO in the far north of New Zealand, where we're a Maori healthcare provider. And so I help them with their social media and internal comms.
Now, I've been to New Zealand a couple of times, got a few Kiwi friends. You don't sound like you're from there. What are you doing there? Are you hiding from COVID? Basically,
that's where everyone wants to be.
I am hiding from COVID. My family and I have been here since the beginning of the year, but it was a get to the chopper sort of moment. We sort of squeaked in there towards the end, but we're really glad to be here. But it was to sort of get out of the States and to get somewhere where things like this are sort of taken a little bit more seriously, you know. But
you think what? So your commander in chief doesn't take those things seriously? Is that what you're saying? I don't.
I mean, we can't talk.
No, we can't talk.
We're just envious of you now.
Two of the biggest liabilities in the world are managing our nations. Who's the other voice on the line?
Dan, and I'm the host of Based on a True Story. It's a podcast about movies and history. So I'm looking forward to it. Always talking about movies.
I'm a very big fan of your podcast. I think I've referred to your podcast when we've had films based on true stories.
Oh,
I think
thank
one
you.
Of them was Facebook one.
Social network. Yes,
there you go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so I think I maybe listened to your episode as a bit of a crib cheat before getting into record. But it sounds like you spend a lot of time researching this and talking about the films. How long does it take you to put this together?
The average episode, so I do two types of episodes. Either it's a solo episode like that one, The Social Network, or I do an interview. And the average for both of them is probably about 25 to 27 hours. And it's funny because I thought when I started doing interviews that I would take less time, but yeah. Now it's just all that time in editing, whereas before it's in research. So,
because you're editing one voice versus two voices, I guess it's a bit of a switch.
Yeah, more of a conversation as opposed to the solo episodes are all, you know, researched heavily ahead of time and mm-hmm. scripted out. So, you know, a lot less editing time.
So we're talking about Hereditary, which is your choice, Brian.
Yes.
Can you tell us, first of all, why you chose it and then give us a synopsis in a minute or less?
Sure. So the reason I chose it is because I hadn't seen it in a while. And when I first saw it, which was probably shortly when it came out in 2018, I was just really blown away by how well it was done. I love horror movies, but I don't typically see a lot that I like anymore. And this one really stood out. And so I wanted to watch it again. And I think that it's a pretty remarkable film. And I like to talk about either films that I really, really like or really, really hate. And so this is one of those. The story is fairly basic. It revolves around this suburban family who the mother, who is Annie, and her husband, Steve. They have two kids, 16-year-old Peter, their son, and the 13-year-old daughter, Charlie. The story opens up with the death of Annie's mother, Ellen Lee, and it goes through this process of following Annie through her grief of her mother and sort of relief, because they were estranged there towards the end. But in her grief, she finds solace in this woman named Joan, who eventually gets her into spiritualism and cultism. And there's a lot of family drama. There's the death of Charlie, eventually, in a horrible decapitation accident.
Let's hold a few of these things back. I'm sure we want to talk about some of those.
Sure.
Some of these more grim parts of the storyline. But so do you tend to gravitate towards the supernatural type horror, or is it you just accept them all horror? You just don't see good ones that take you at the moment?
Well, I think that something that really makes a horror movie stand out is that, and this is one of the points I wanted to make, is that it balances sort of the mundane with the supernatural. And what I mean by mundane is the reality of life. For example, if you take The Exorcist, a lot of The Exorcist starts out with building up to with a mother and a relationship with her daughter. And it's just everyday things and family drama. Well, this Hereditary, I think, does the same thing. There are a lot of real moments in it, and they're strongly balanced with the supernatural, and it becomes, it heightens both of them. Mm-hmm. And for me, a bad horror movie leans too much into jump scares or the supernatural or too much VFX, and it brings you out of the everyday world that you know. And so you sort of lose that grounding of, man, this could really happen, or this applies to my life. You know, it becomes more like a superhero movie to me, to where everything is not real.
What were your thoughts, Dan?
Well, unlike Brian, I'm not a fan of horror movies, so I should probably get that out there. But it was kind of one of those movies where at the end of it, I still really wasn't sure what happened. Like, to me, it just seemed like there's this demon king who is supposedly really, really powerful, but apparently not powerful enough to really do what he wants, but he can still force people to decapitate themselves. But for some reason, he needs them for something. And none of that was really explained very well to me. So at the end of it, I was still wondering what I just watched.
that's kind of his trademark. Ari Aster's trademark is a little bit like that.
When you say trademark, this is his debut film, isn't it? So
he's made two. It was the first time I saw it. At the end of it, I was basically like, "What? What did I
see?" In a positive or negative way.
And then, I think it wasn't either. I really enjoyed lots of it, and then I thought the ending was a little bit silly compared to the rest of it. And then when I saw Midsommar last year, it made me kind of realize a little bit more what his sort of thing is, and then made me then want to come back to this It's recently come on Netflix UK. So when you picked it, Brian, I was very, very, very excited to rewatch it. And I think rewatching it kind of helps fill in the kind of like the what was going on, and it kind of makes a little bit more sense, even though it is pretty bonkers.
So was it the first, you know, was it after the first watch, Brian, that you were taken by, or was it after a repeated watch that you kind of it filled in for you?
Both. I mean, like she's saying, there. I think it has a high watchability, or you know, repeat watch score.
Interesting. Scoring already.
Initially, what struck me the most were the performances. Toni Collette's performance of the mother is just outstanding, and as far as the casting, it was superb, and all of the performances brought that, what I was talking about, the reality, the dinner scene where they sort of have it out that's a hell of a scene. I mean, horror movie or not. And so that struck me initially, and then you can watch it again and you find out, and you can go on YouTube and people have picked this apart. You know, they go through each scene and they find little hidden Easter eggs and things like that. But it is just littered, like Midsommar, with symbolism. And it is based upon a real demon, like real beliefs that people had, a cult, like a real cult. And so I think that part actually makes it scarier. So there's a lot to be filled in as far as the details go.
I think the cult thing is the thing that's scariest for me. Recently reviewed The Invitation, which goes along the kind of cult route. And I'm kind of in Dan's camp here. I was kind of like, I mean, again, just to go back to your point, Brian, performances, great. Toni Collette is just, you know, whenever she's in the film, you're in fantastic hands there. No issues at all. And I like the performances of the rest of the cast as well. But I was just kind of like, What is this? Sorry. And it was going along nicely, and then until the seance stuff happened, and then the kind of possession happens, and it just kind of lost me. And I was like, at no point did it bring me back. But there was some, up until there's the kind of the tight relationship drama with the family. You can tell they're all stretched. You can tell that, you know, Toni Collette's husband is like struggling to try and keep the family together because he senses it kind of ripping apart, and she's there making his miniatures of crime scenes, which and unsavory scenes that manifested in their lives before. So he's trying to hold them together. She's going through grief openly. Her son's kind of in his own kind of way and going into, I don't know, just being a teenager at the time. He's lost his grandmother, and their daughters. We don't really understand what's going on with the daughter. There seems to be a lot of things going on there. And that...
It's because she's been possessed by Paimon.
No, but that was towards the end, right?
Well, no, this is the whole thing. The whole thing is that she is, throughout that time, possessed by Paimon, and basically they've been waiting for this moment, which is why she's kind of creepy and out there and collecting all the birds' heads and things. So if you kind of like look into it a little bit more, Paimon's like been in her forever. So like the whole thing about grandma breastfeeding the baby is kind of like feeding Paimon and getting Paimon ready for this, you know, moment to come.
What moment exactly though?
Apparently. When Charlie can possess Peter's body. So they need a male body. So Paimon's in a female body, which isn't, apparently demons don't like female bodies. So this is the whole kind of thing.
See, that's the part I didn't really get. Like, why, if he's so powerful, why couldn't he just possess the person that he wanted to possess to begin with instead of going through this? Because there was this one little mention in there where it did mention, you know, he's looking for a male body and to possess. But I didn't get like, okay, he's supposed to be so powerful. He can make these people kill themselves and do all these different things. But they never really explained why they couldn't, at least to my... where I understood it, to where he couldn't just go possess the person he wanted to possess to begin with.
Well, I think there's...
I guess it would have been a shorter film then, maybe.
That's true.
It would have been less than the 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Fair point.
I think it could have done with being shorter and more to the point and more kind of snappy with this.
He doesn't do short, though. I mean, the Midsommar extended cut is like nearly 4 hours or something, and this could have been...
Wow.
A bit longer as well. I think they ended up cutting like a good half an hour from it that they'd actually filmed. Yeah,
because I didn't get that. Now you said about the breastfeeding, I was wondering why that was a plot point. apart from it just being a creepy thing. And that's like, oh, okay, that's fine. Now you say that, you know, after watching the film a couple of weeks ago and thinking, why is this is weird? And that kind of fills in that massive spot there. Obviously talking about a male host is needed. It just seemed all a bit like, it still doesn't sit well with me.
I don't think anything kind of sits well in this film. I think
no,
but I think the thing for me was that when I watched this, there was just so many things that I just couldn't get out of my head from it. And I mean, the decapitation scene, which I'm sure we'll talk loads about, it happens like half an hour in, so it's a pretty quick thing to happen. So that's just like insane. And then
well, if we just stop there with the decapitation, because I think that's one of the things that kind of stuck with me, is that if Paimon was all, as Dan was saying, if Paimon's a strong-willed character, then his weakness is peanuts, and that causes Charlie to go like loopy and stick a head out of a window, and Paimon hasn't got enough control over it to like, or was Paimon driving that through? So
is that she needs to die, I think, is the thing. I've got no idea why everything kind of happens at this particular point and why it didn't happen sooner. Maybe it's to do with like Peter's age or something. I don't know. Or maybe it was when basically the grandma died, that is when everything kind of kicked into the things, because she was kind of like the leader of bringing Paimon to life. Maybe.
What were you going to say, Brian?
I was going to say, if you look into the actual history of the demon Paimon, sort of makes sense, because he has, in order to conjure him, you have to have three beheadings, three sacrifices. And those are the ones that we have in the movie. And that's why...
Does that include the bird?
I think it includes the grandmother Ellen,
Charlie.
And at the end, because I was going to ask which decapitation you're talking about, because there's actually three. And then there's the one at the end where Annie cuts her own head off with the piano wire.
That is super gross.
And that's the third one, right? And you can see this in the symbol, you know, the symbol and the necklace that Ellen wears, and it's all over the place. That is a reference to the three heads. But so there's like a logic to it. And so it's reflective of the real belief in the Paimon eighth king of hell sort of myth. But there's... So there's their part, but I think dramatically, as she said, it would have been a much shorter film if he was able to just go, oh, well, I'll just possess this. Because a huge part of the movie or theme is fate versus free will, right? Mm. And at the end, we realize that the family doesn't have any say in what's going on, just like we get our hereditary traits, just like we get our base personality traits from our family. We can run from them. We can move to another country, like in New Zealand. But we can't escape those things that make us who we are, that we bring with us. So, I mean, that's a big theme of the movie. And I think that's why Paimon can't just do this. He has to string them along and play with them like Annie plays with the things in the little dollhouse. You know what I mean?
And do you think there has to be a lineage there? Because if it's the three decapitations where the mother, grandmother, the mother, and the daughter, do you think that's part of his raison d'être?
Sure.
Yeah, because like Steve's just kind of, his death is sort of a bit incidental, isn't it? He's not really part of the payment plan. So he just kind of is a bit unfortunate in that.
Explain Steve's death.
So in trying to destroy Charlie's notebook, Annie accidentally sets her husband on fire, which was one of those incredibly visually stunning and what the fuck moments. And I kind of felt a bit sorry for Steve because, you know, he's really trying.
He's on fire.
He's on fire.
And, you know, you can kind of feel his pain. And there's also he's responsible for the funniest line in the film when he's sent upstairs into the attic to investigate that Annie has found the dead beheaded body of her mother that's been dug up. And she sort of says, you need to go upstairs and look at this. And then she sort of said, there's more than that. And he says, what, more than your mother's headless body? And he just kind of says it in a way that brings like this slightly weird, uncomfortable horror in it.
Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about
there's a lot of dark comedy to it. Is that what you were about to say?
Yeah. I mean, some people probably won't find it funny, but I did.
I mean, there are several moments that I found pretty funny. The one that I laughed out loud is the one where she goes to the grief group for the first time and tells them this sort of laundry list of people who have died in her family and with from mental illness or whatever. And then they edit and cut to the group who's just sort of looking her at all. I mean, I laughed out loud at that. But.
Well, because preceding that, before that, literally seconds, she's like, I don't want to say anything. And then it all came out. There's some amazing shots in this film. And I think that's what I'll take away from it. Do you want to discuss your kind of favorite scenes or most striking scenes? I mean, Helen, you talked about the Charlie decapitation. Do you want to lead out with that one?
So I think when I watched this for the first time, I saw it at the cinema with my friend, and I think we both sort of watched it, and the way it happens is like, well, something's happened. I'm not kind of quite sure, like, is she okay? Is she going to be fine? And he kind of drives away and you think, well, what's kind of happened? What's gone on? And me and my friend were like, is she okay? Do you think she's okay? And then, you know, he kind of gets out of the car and he goes to bed and you're just thinking, but what, when are you going to find out what happens? And then you do find out. And basically it's a cut to Charlie's decapitated head by the road with loads of flies on it and Annie just screaming. And you're like, oh, that's what happens.
That Annie's crying scene there was just, you know, that's excellence in... That's Toni Collette par excellence, basically. That you just felt everything as a parent. There's just literally flooding out through every single pore of her body. I've not felt like so struck by a grief scene in many a film. But yeah, the Charlie decapitation. When I saw it, I was kind of like, I did see the head coming off when it hit the post. I didn't believe it. I was just like, is that really?
Can that happen?
Is that what's happened? Based on her brother's reaction, because he just kind of went, "Are you okay?" And then didn't hear anything. And then, like you say, he just kind of sauntered into bed, obviously like a bit shell-shocked, but he had been smoking marijuana. So it might just be that kind of, so we didn't know I didn't know if that was like some kind of dream where maybe he'd just been to the party and he hadn't taken his sister and he just got home. So it was a bit things like that, kind of playing in my mind. But yeah, when you see the roadside head with the, I think it was ants, not flies, all over her head. That was gross. Any other scenes that kind of, Brian, Dan, anything stuck in your mind?
You mentioned the ants, and I'm. There's another scene where he's in bed. I think mother comes in to the room, and he's covered in ants, and that's kind of a hallucination type thing. And so, I was in a similar boat with you there, where I wasn't sure how much of this is actually happening, and how much of this is like a hallucination. And I guess that kind of goes back to a lot of that side of it and what you were talking about earlier, Brian, with the, you know, there has to be three decapitations. I don't remember the movie ever talking about that being part of what was supposed to happen. Like they went into a lot of detail about the family and dealing with grief. And I thought that was, you know, they did an amazing job with that, but what's supposed to be happening with, in order to get this demon out of hell or, you know, to do whatever they're supposed to be doing, I felt was very, very hazy. And half of it, like I thought maybe a lot of it was a hallucination, because there were some hallucinations in there that, and so I wasn't sure what was actually happening and what wasn't. Maybe it's all Inception. It's all a dream at the end.
Well, apparently he didn't originally write this one as a horror film. This was more of a kind of straightforward drama. Apparently he's written 10 films. We may get to see them all. And this one originally wasn't a horror, so it was basically kind of the drama based on the kind of the grief and the journey through that. So at some point it became a horror, so that might be slightly why kind of the grief and the family drama is probably its strength, whereas the supernatural element might feel a little bit more rushed. I don't know, possibly.
Yeah.
Ryan, any shots for you that were particularly creepy or freaked you out?
I think the creepiest scene was probably when it's towards the end, when they do such a great job of Peter getting up out of bed, and this is at the point he's about to get chased by his mother, and she's up on the wall in the corner, and they do really, really great stuff with misdirection to get you to not notice that, and then they cut away from him as he sets up in bed, and then you see a light come on near the treehouse, and then they cut back to him, and it's illuminated his room just enough to where you can see in the corner. I remember seeing that because I completely fell for it, and it scared the shit out of me. Because there's nothing creepier than realizing or seeing somebody that you know has been watching you.
Yeah.
You know? So.
I think my, and I said it before, is the piano, she's kind of hanging in the air with a piano wire around her neck and taking her own head off. And that is just like, and her face at that point as well, looking, staring intently at him as she's sawing her own head off and the blood's kind of spurting out just enough. And, and you never see her drop, but then you go outside and hear the ka-dunk. I was just like, oh, that's not nice.
No, that is not nice. You are correct.
I mean, one thing that adds to all of these amazing moments, which we've not talked about yet, that the sound and the score is amazing. And I think that's one thing that I remembered watching it from the first time that I haven't actually written whose response for it, but just the sounds are so creepy and that they really kind of get like inside you. And I think that just like really, really heightens the kind of like super creepiness.
I would also attribute that to the cinematography too, the creepiness involved in the sort of spiritual floating camera that is achieved throughout the film. So I would say that serves the same purpose. And she's right about the audio or the music too.
Yeah. And also like, this isn't the first time I've seen kind of creepy miniatures. I don't know if you watch CSI, but there was a big CSI episode where someone built miniatures, and they built miniatures of the crime scene and left them at the crime scene, and they were like exact miniatures. So miniatures themselves, I find like kind of a little bit creepy.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have come from the worlds of film, television, music, food, comedy, and podcasting. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Okay, well, let's head to the scores, guys.
So welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, Brian, with your recommendability, please.
My recommendability was 4. And I recommend it because I think that because mainly of the performances, but I also think that it's a very much a film of its time. About cults, about the family, and the tensions within that.
Done.
Well, my recommendability for this would be 2. two.
Helen says, you can't have decimal places. You can go 2.2138, whatever you want. But Stone Cold 2 is fine as well.
I'll go 2. As I mentioned earlier, I'm not a huge fan of horror movies in general, but then also kind of also something I mentioned earlier too, like at the end, I've learned a lot. I've learned more about the movie from this discussion that we've had than from watching the movie. And so I don't know if I just watched the movie and I don't know that I could really recommend it to others when somebody says, hey, what's it about? Be like, I don't know, a demon who lives in a treehouse and cuts people's heads off.
Helen.
So I think this film and also Midsommar as well, they're quite dividing, and they're kind of dividing in the sort of horror fans as well. He's doing kind of a very, very sort of different thing with horror, and I completely get why you'd give it a 2. But I'd give it a 4. I think there's just something really genuinely creepy about this film, and I think a second watch, if you're at least kind of, I kind of enjoyed that, but I'm not really sure why, and it's left me in a strange place. I kind of want to go back and revisit. I think it definitely may shift your feelings a little bit. But if you've watched it and gone, I've kind of had enough, then that's fine. But I think, as also you've already said, Toni Collette is amazing in this. Like, everyone is so good. It's just a really, really creepy, genuine, scary horror film. And yeah, I love it, but I can't recommend it to everyone. It's a 4.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a 3.8 here. I think if you have an interest in film, then watch it, definitely. But I think we'll have a fair few people coming away and saying, Kobe, what was going on there, mate? Can you just explain? but I think there are enough in the performances and enough in some of the freakier scenes that will get the horror fans nice. And there aren't any jump scares there, really, are there? Just maybe the decapitation, you don't expect that and things like that. So
also when smashes his head into the desk is pretty kind of like, I didn't expect that.
And there's when his mother's chasing him towards the end there, I think it was kind of more of a jump scare type.
So 3.8, repeat viewing score, Brian.
I'll say 4.5 on that.
Okay. How many times have you seen it so far?
I think two or three. And that all comes from, there's a lot of backstory to it. I completely understand the lack of engagement or misunderstanding about what's going on. But if you look into what's happening with the demon, the story becomes really, really engaging. And there is visually a lot going on that can be overlooked very easily. So yeah. I think it's a really high repeat viewing score.
Done.
I'm going to bring everybody's scores down. I'm going to give this a 1. I don't know that I would ever watch it again. Now that I kind of know what happens at the end, I know what happens, so I don't see ever watching this again.
So a 1, is it?
Yeah.
Helen?
So I'm going to give this 4. I think once a year, probably for me, will be quite a nice time for me to have.
Holy shit. Would there be a particular time of the year? Is it like... autumn solstice,
yeah,
or
maybe nice summer. I genuinely got so much out of it the second time round, and even the kind of like creepy bits, they still got me, but it just made a bit more sense, and I could be a bit more like, oh, okay, so I kind of get that a little bit more. But it is 2 hours and 7 minutes, so it's not like I'm just going to pop this on, for fun, because you need to set aside the 2 hours to really get involved in it and kind of get the sound up loud and make it all dark and creepy.
So what was your score? Was it 4?
4, yeah.
I'm going to join Dan on the 1 here. I think what I'm going to do, based on Brian's tellings earlier on, that I'm going to go on YouTube and just go through those kind of walkthroughs of like 22 things you missed from watching Hereditary. And I think that will be enough for me to kind of go, oh, that's what happened. And then not watch it again. And it's fine. I think there's just better kind of horrors that I will want to rewatch. Like The Babadook for me was a lot kind of stronger, tighter film that kind of works in similar lines. So I'd much rather rewatch that, revisit that over this, I think. But I think some of the most striking shots in this were some of the strongest I've seen in film for a long time. Small screen score, Brian.
I gave it a 3.
Where did you watch it the first time?
I think I saw it in the movies, in the cinema.
Sure.
And then I watched it on television. I think that you either need to go big or go small. I would even say maybe even a smartphone over a TV. Whatever you do, you need a very, very dark room, because there are a lot of subtle things visually that you need to, in order to catch the creepiness and the scariness, you need to be able to see in the background. You need to be able to see in the shadows, I think, to really get it. And there are a lot of audio things that you need to hear, like the thumps of decapitated heads falling and that kind of thing.
Dan?
This actually, I give it a 4, because nothing about this, of course, this is the first time I saw it, and I saw it on TV. I didn't see it in the cinema. But nothing about it really stood out to me as I really would have gotten a much better experience, in cinema with, the sound was great, but I heard the thud of the body. So, you know, didn't miss anything there. but it seemed like, you know, the storyline itself, it was very, you know, focused on the family and in that way. And I didn't think that it really needed the cinema in order to get that. I thought they did a good job of delivering that on a small screen as well.
Helen?
So I think I'm going to go for a 4. I always think that watching horror with a shared audience, by the cinema, is always the fun way to do it, because you can kind of have that collective shock together and, like, people screaming. Yeah. I like. Also, I think if you watch it on a small screen, just kind of make sure that it's not like a bright summer's day and you've got good sound, because I think you can kind of appreciate it on home viewing. And it does, because it's all really kind of only really set in that one sort of house, there's a few exterior bits, you kind of get that claustrophobia of watching a horror at home when it's, you know, a lot of the concentrated horror moments are in a house. So I think see it at the cinema if you can, but if not, it's fine as long as you've got good sound.
So what was that score again?
4, please.
Another 4. Yeah, I agree with what Brian and yourself said, Helen. I think it's not lunchtime on a Sunday. Put this on with the sun blaring through the window. Is it? It's if you on your iPad under your duvet cover, under your quilt, that kind of thing is even, I think, would be fine. So I don't think it needs a big screen. So I think it does do quite well. I'm going to give 4.5, but it would be nice, I guess, to see it in the cinema. Because there are some subtle things, and I do remember stopping and just going back like 30 seconds a couple of times, just say, was that something in the corner? Yes, it was. Okay, there, fine. so, you know, a good contrast TV, it would be great. So I'm going to, what did I say, 4.5.
You know, one caveat I would say about that is that I do enjoy watching in a group with a cinema, especially scary movies. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I really hate is that when someone gets the scare or sees the ghost before I do, and so I end up responding to the audience instead of the, so if you're slow to get things like me, you may want to sit home by yourself.
Brian, the engagement score.
Engagement score, I gave it a 4. Yeah, I think that I was pretty much engaged the whole time. I mean, especially with the family drama, but then also visually, I think that the cinematography helps to create an eerie feeling about it, mm-hmm. that keeps you guessing what's going to be around the next corner, like literally as they pan around. And then just this sort of what the fuck's going on kind of thing that you have to figure out. And that can become daunting, as is obvious to some people, and turn them off. But it got to also be kind of engaging. So
Dan,
I give it a 3. The first, probably the first 15-20 minutes or so, I was still kind of trying to figure out what direction they were going in. I mean, it was very heavily focused on the grief side, and I wasn't quite sure what some of the weird things that were starting to happen. But towards the end, even though I as I've said earlier, I think they could have explained a lot of it better, but I do think that it started to pick up, and I started to get a lot more engaged toward the end. So,
Helen?
So I'm going to give it a 4.7. Definitely a little bit less engaged the second time watching it. But I just because it's like, what really could happen next? Because you've just got kind of, you know, there's no like normal line. Literally anything could happen. So I think even if you're kind of not entirely sold on it, you're still going to be engaged, because you'll be like, come on, throw it at me. What haven't I seen yet? Bring it all on. Bring on the crazy. So 4.7.
I'm going to go 2.5, right down the middle here. Because I think it was like for the first half of the first part of the film, I was like fully in there. Thinking, okay, what is going on? She's walking around with a dead bird's head. This is creepy. And then and I think it was when she had the seance with the family, that's when it started to, you know, started to jump the shark at that point. And then I don't think I really recovered from everything else I saw after that. It just made it more, you know, the jump was higher and higher over the shark tank, over Fonzie jumping over the shark infested waters. So it never recovered from that. Although there were some of the best scenes after that point, but I was still like, oh man, I've lost it now. So 2.5 for me. So that gives us an overall score of 3.375. Decent. I thought this was going to be high. I thought I was going to be the only dissenter in this. So I'm glad you joined me on this, Dan.
Collectively, we brought it down, probably.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a quite high score going in there. But I you know, 3.375, I think it's decent. It's a divisive horror film, which already would split the audience. I heard nothing but good things about it. So it's you said, Helen, you said that a few people weren't so taken by it.
I think it's very divisive, which is fine.
Oh, yeah, of course it's fine. Absolutely. So we head to Twitter, and do listen to us, do pay attention to our Twitter account. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And before we record any film, we do a shout out, in this case saying we're reviewing Hereditary with Dan Lefebvre and Brian. I didn't know how to revert to Brian. Brian from New Zealand, that's what I called you. Have you seen it? Give us your thoughts for an on-air shout out. So Brian, are you on Twitter at the moment? Can you see the Twitter screen?
Sure, this is from the Countdown Pod. An incredible debut from Ari Aster, which unsettles and disturbs in equal measure. And that's before highlighting the stunning performance from Toni Collette. 4.5 stars.
Dan, a short statement for the next one.
Yeah, from Cult 45, the movie podcast, simply said, love this movie.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I did ask to try and poke for a bit more insight.
How many stars is
yeah,
love?
Yeah, nothing. Just love. We'll say above four, maybe, for this one.
They did say love, not
it's
liked.
Minimum yeah. Four, I think, if someone says yeah. Love. If it's a like, it's anywhere between like
2.5,
3,
yeah.
4.
Guys, can you sign up by telling us where people can find you online and say bye to the listeners?
Oh, sure. You can... I'm not online, so I don't know. You can come to New Zealand and visit me. I'm in Kataia in the far north. So come on, I'll put you up for a couple of days and we'll watch some horror movies. But thanks for inviting me on the show. And it's been really fun discussing this.
No problems. I'm done.
You can find my podcast at basedonatruestorypodcast.com and all my contact information on there.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. That's it, guys.
Thanks for coming on,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, thank you very
Bye.
Much.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.